As I indicated, this is A23-0678, in the matter of the correction orders issued to the Wilshire Bloomington. As all parties are aware, the relator will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent, the Department of Health, will have 15 minutes for their argument. And then finally, the relator will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. As soon as you're ready, you can approach the microphone. It goes up and down, or the podium goes up and down, and you can adjust the microphone to your level. And just please remember to talk to us in a loud voice, and please give us clearly enunciate your name so that we know who we're talking to.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
I am John Brendel, and I am counsel for the Wilshire of Bloomington in this matter. May it please the court. This particular case involves one primary issue, and that issue is a determination of whether the Minnesota Department of Health met the requisite burden of proof when the evidence in the case and in the record is viewed in its entirety. I submit to you at the onset, members of the court, that the clear answer is no. The commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Health found that the Wilshire had violated MnSTAT 144G.91, subdivisions 4, A, and 8. The primary reason for that finding is that it was determined that the Wilshire allegedly failed to continue to address residents' fall risk during her stay at Wilshire. And the substantive violations were termed maltreatment and neglect. In his recommendations to the Minnesota Department of Health, the ALJ, Mortensen, stated that, and I quote, reasonable and necessary care was not taken to help prevent falls or to help prevent serious injuries from falls, end quote, while also curiously concluding, and I quote, her risk of falls had not disappeared by March 2021 nor August 2021, end quote. Members of the court, that is a somewhat incomprehensible finding by the ALJ, in as much as everybody associated with this case has agreed from the very onset that every resident of an assisted living facility constitutes a fall risk.
But we're talking about a resident here who had fallen at least 11 times there.
Yes.
So we're talking about a specific patient, not generally here.
That is correct. We are talking about a specific patient, but there is absolutely no way to obviate the potential for falling by any resident of any assisted living facility.
But what's at issue is whether or not reasonable care had been taken, right, to either prevent a fall or mitigate the potential injury from somebody trying that may fall.
That is absolutely correct.
Including, for example, having different types of monitors, including having the pad on the floor, which could have been provided.
Right.
In which they explicitly cited, you know, at least three ways that reasonable care could have been provided.
Well, those were speculative judgments.
Why is that speculative when those types of care have been provided to other patients, though?
Well, first of all, with respect to the floor mats, those types of care had never been provided by my client. They were only provided by hospice when hospice became involved in any particular case.
But hospice did become involved in this case as well.
That is correct. But hospice never ordered a floor mat.
So the facility did not have those floor mats themselves?
They had floor mats for residents when hospice ordered those.
Couldn't the facility have used those floor mats on their own?
I presume they could have, but
okay. And they could have been provided even if the lift had been there as well, because the lift can just be moved.
That's right. And
that had been done for other residents as well, right?
It had been done for other residents after hospice had ordered the floor mats.
Why would you need to wait until hospice to have those put in place, especially when you have a person who has a history of numerous falls?
The reason that the floor mats were not implemented was because with the Hoyer lifts and a two-person assist for these types of residents, the Hoyer lift presents more of a hazard, excuse me, floor mat presents more of a hazard when trying to maneuver a Hoyer lift around the bed of a residence.
Why can't you move one or the other? They don't, I mean, that's what had been done for other patients. You don't, it's not an either or proposition with the floor mat and the Hoyer lift, though. Right.
Yeah, but I think it's also important, Your Honor, to recognize that a floor mat does not prevent a fall.
No, it does not, but it may limit the injury that occurs.
It may, but it may not.
And well, but that, now you're getting speculative, I think, counsel, terms of whether or not it does. But at least if a floor mat is provided, then the facility can say, you know, we did our best. We tried everything that we could to either prevent a fall or to limit the injury from somebody falling on a hard floor and breaking their leg or arm or other extremity.
I think it's important, Your Honor, to recognize that in many of these cases, the resolution calls for a judgment call on the part of the director of nursing or the nursing supervisor to determine what are appropriate measures and what are the least risky. With respect to the other...
You know, and I agree with that. You know, at the end of the day, you can do everything and the person's going to fall. If she keeps taking off the tab monitor, she's going to tab monitors. You know, but... and I understand your argument that, you know, this was kind of hospice's deal rather than your client's. But, you know, who was filling out the care cards? Updating the care cards. I mean, it was your
my client's, okay. My client's staff.
So, you know, and maybe I'm misreading your argument, so you can tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, part of your argument seems to be, well, by not updating, well, we didn't update the care cards, and that itself is kind of updating them, you know.
Well, I think that that's...
First of all, am I correct? Is that, and I've oversimplified it, but I mean, part of it is the very fact that we looked at the card and didn't update it indicates, you know, that there was a decision made that nothing more can be done. I mean, is that sort of your argument?
Right.
Okay. Then I guess I would be looking for, I mean, if your argument is hospice deals the mats, or hospice is responsible to provide the mats, and, you know, they didn't, so, you know, it's on them. Why, what I would have expected then, maybe on the care card, is either one or two things when you update it. You know what? Nothing more to be done. I mean, she's fallen again. There's nothing else we can do. You know, there you go. Or if you're saying it's hospice's deal, I would have been looking to a care card to be updated saying, hey, call hospice, get a mat. You know, which may or may not have made any difference, but, you know, if hospice is providing mats in other clients at the facility, then, you know, somebody needs to talk to somebody. Now, why is that analysis crazy on my part?
Well, I don't think it is crazy, but I think it also contains the presumption that these types of analyses were not ongoing. And Elizabeth Johnson's testimony during the hearing indicated that she was evaluating these types of things every single time there was a report of a fall. And the important consideration with respect to Brighton Hospice, and I want to make it very clear at the onset here that my client is not trying to deflect any responsibility to Brighton Hospice. What it is saying that after March 22nd of 2021, when the resident was returned to Wilshire at the request of the family, who was aware of every single fall she had encountered during, well prior to her residency there.
I get it, and they're the ones who said level 3, and to your client's credit, they said, nope, going to be level 4, so I get that.
And so Elizabeth Johnson, who's been at this for over 20 years, and most of which was as a director of nursing or the director of health care at Wilshire, was evaluating these situations. Her testimony is very clear on that. But what the Minnesota Department of Health has done throughout the pendency of this exercise is insisted that she had to update the care cards or the service plan rather than making sure that they were up to date. And conflating those terms with one another is something that I think is important here from the perspective of analyzing exactly what was going on there. Ms. Johnson's opinion was that even though she didn't update it or she didn't write something down every single time there was an incident which occurred, that her position was that those cards, those care cards, were still up to date because she believed objectively, as a person with her experience in the industry, that there was nothing more that could be done. So those care cards and those service plans were always up to date, even though there wasn't some inscription subsequent to a fall, which in the terms utilized by the MDH made them updated. So she was always of the opinion that they were up to date because they had tried other modalities of preventive measures that were not effective for a number of reasons, including the fact that the motion sensor, which was recommended or which was suggested by the MDH, was ineffective because there were so many of them at the nursing station, and the resident involved in this case was the farthest from the nursing station and could not be moved because of the restrictions imposed through the COVID-19 regulations.
She kept taking off the tab monitors. I get that, so right. That's not working. So again, why do these sense and motions don't work? I didn't quite understand that portion of your brief, and you just repeated it, and I have to admit, I'm not as good as I used to be. I still don't understand it.
It's all right. I understand.
So why wouldn't these new sensor monitors not work or not be effective? And the answer is?
The answer is because the manufacturer's specifications required that the sensor, the motion sensor, be placed a foot above the floor on the wall. And so, consequently, if there were a fall involved, she would already have fallen before the motion sensor would be activated. And they had attempted to use these motion sensors, and they just were simply ineffective in dealing with the issue. And as a consequence of that, Ms. Johnson decided that whatever other modalities would be available, such as the TABS alarm, was utilized. And the TABS alarm, this resident was a woman who had suffered a stroke. She had multiple modalities of medical issues, which I cited in my brief. And, it's beyond me as to how she was able to constantly climb out of bed. And I would also mention that the Brighton Hospice.
Apparently you never met my 97-year-old mother.
Well, my mother will be 97 in January.
It's amazing what they can do if they have their minds to it.
She still
all right, let's say, fine, fair enough. The sensor monitors don't work. I get it now. Fair enough.
Okay.
So what about, and obviously these are cost things and are expensive, yep. And I don't doubt that. What about, the monitors don't work, therefore we're going to have to check her more. And let's say, just for the sake of argument, and again, I'm well aware that there's a limit to what we can all do, but, an alternative, we've talked about the mats, or Judge Reyes has talked about the mats. Okay, we got to go in and look at her. We got to check her every half hour.
They did that.
Does she see? Okay.
They did that, as I outlined in the in my brief. There are 13 different modalities of preventive measures that they employed throughout her stay there. Interestingly, too, Judge Connolly, the...
So just that we're clear, the record indicates post 3/23/21, someone was going in there every 30 minutes.
No, not at that time. Okay. They had implemented that procedure prior to her March March 18, 2021 fall. But after she was returned, Brighton Hospice took over the management of her care, as I've cited. Let's see, now I lost my train of thought.
I have one quick question. I know you only have about 50 seconds left, and we might need to follow up on this on your rebuttal, but it appears that you're trying to shift responsibility to the hospice in your argument, but isn't the facility still responsible under Chapter 144G for her continued care?
Yes, okay. It is. And we've never tried to deflect that responsibility. Our position, Your Honor, is that irrespective of what the MDH has suggested here, that we were doing everything conceivably possible to prevent this woman from falling, and that it simply was not possible to prevent every conceivable way by which she might fall. Obviously, we cannot strap her to the bed or tie her to the bed. That's an unreasonable restraint, and it is not permissible. Short of that, I don't know how it could have been prevented to keep this woman from falling. And the other thing is, and I see I'm out of time, but the other...
You can finish that thought.
The other important point is this. When she first came to the Wilshire, the records of the St. Gertrude's Rehabilitation Hospital indicate that she was there after having been treated at Southdale Fairview Hospital for having fallen three times in 1 hour at St. Gertrude's. Unfortunately, this appears to be a case where it just was not possible to prevent her from falling, regardless of the measures that may have been taken.
Thank you. And you will have, Mr. Rendell, 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Jonasson, and I represent the Minnesota Department of Health. As we've talked about, the issue here today is whether substantial evidence supports the Commissioner of Health's determination that the Wilshire violated Section 144G and was responsible for neglect. Ensuring the safety and well-being of vulnerable adults in assisted living facilities is of paramount importance to Minnesotans. The legislature has given the Commissioner of Health the authority to enforce enacted laws or laws that were enacted for that purpose. The legislature also enacted the Vulnerable Adults Act, which tasked the commissioner with investigating potential instances of maltreatment at facilities' MDH licenses. MDH is presumed to have the expertise in these areas and is entitled to deference and judicial review of its determinations.
So, Mr. Jonasson, what more could they have done? Well, let's start by, you agree that the sensor on the wall that everyone wants was not going to detect movement enough so that somebody can get in there and, you know, I don't know, push her back or something, right? I mean, is that a fair statement?
I would agree that the one type of sensor that was mentioned at hearing was not, according to a picture on the labeling, I wouldn't necessarily say it was the manufacturer's instructions that were brought up. There was no manual that was ever entered into evidence. At the hearing, it was a picture on the box. But according to that picture, it was placed a foot above the ground. But also, Ms. Johnson testified that that was the only type of motion sensor that was ever considered.
So your position, so the tab monitors don't work. So what was the record, what was the evidence in the record that the department presented that, now, you know, look at the Acme monitor, that'll do the trick. Was there anything like that?
No, but the Wilshire acknowledged, it's up to the DON, the director of nursing, to sit down and have that focused assessment and analyze what can be done to help do that, or to help this situation in the future. And that might include starting things that have already been done that did not work previously. You can't just get to what you think is banging your head into the wall and say, well, we're stuck. You've got to keep trying if there continue to be falls. And of course, here the floor mats were never employed, despite other residents having floor mats in their room, and despite other residents who required assist of a Hoyer lift having floor mats in their room.
Is Mr. Brendel right that for the floor mats, it was the hospice folks who put the mats in?
I don't recall from the record. From Ms. Olmedo, who was a former unlicensed personnel, staff at the facility. She testified that, yes, other residents had floor mats, and yes, other residents with Hoyers. To the extent that Ms. Johnson testified that those were provided by hospice, I would have to defer to the transcript on that, Your Honor.
Fair enough.
I have a question. Isn't the Department of Health really engaging in 2020 hindsight? I mean, you had a fall in, what was it, August or September of 2020, and then you didn't have any falls until March of 2021, and then you didn't have any other falls until August 1st of 2021. And that's a long time for a patient who was very active, who fell actually three times in a prior facility in 1 hour, to not have a fall. I mean, doesn't that show that the facility actually was engaging in proper care of this person? And I mean, you can't prevent somebody from falling. All you can do is take steps to try to mitigate it. But if somebody wants to get out of their bed, they're going to find a way to get out of their bed.
And I would agree with you. You cannot 100% ever ensure that a fall is not going to occur. The Department of Health's position, though, is that after the September 2020 fall, the records provided didn't show that there was any kind of assessment or any new fall interventions put into place after March fall.
But my point is, doesn't the record show that from going from September 2020 to March of 2021, their procedures that they had implemented were actually working because she didn't fall?
Until March, though. And then after March...
But the fact that you had that much time during which she never fell out of bed, doesn't that indicate that the steps that they took were reasonable?
Well, what I'm saying is that after the September fall, there's no evidence of even an assessment to look at what could we do, or something saying, at least we've looked at this, we've had our detailed, focused analysis, and we don't think that anything else is necessary.
Why is that required?
Because that is required after any fall to assess and update a service plan. And even if the service plan doesn't need updating, you need to have that assessment. It's a change in condition where an assessment should occur, regardless of if you're going to implement anything new.
Isn't there anything in the record indicating, based on the director of nursing testimony, that she had actually had reviewed it but determined that there wasn't anything more that needed to be added to it, the current plan was sufficient?
I believe maybe the testimony was on those lines, but there was no documentation on that. And when we're talking about the documentation versus witness credibility, that's something that's specifically in the province for the ALJ and the commissioner to determine, and weighing the evidence and determining credibility.
So the fact that, I understand the credibility, you give deference to the fact finder, but the fact that she actually testified, no, I reviewed it, I looked at it, I determined, given my 20 years of experience, nothing more could have been done. We're going to continue to do what we have done up to this point. That's not sufficient?
Well, the documentation in this area is vital when we're talking about medical records.
We need to have this documented.
I agree with you. And I the whole up-to-date versus update, I'm not really sure I'm going along with that. But...
If I can make one point on that,
go right ahead.
We're talking about appropriate services based on accepted health standards. I don't understand the whole updated versus up-to-date thing either. I'm talking about appropriate services.
Right. But correct me if I'm wrong, because I want to follow up on Judge Reyes's excellent question. There's nothing in the record. The director of nursing, Ms. Johnson, said what she said. Okay. Now, I didn't see anything in the record that said from the ALJ, I don't believe her. I don't believe she was doing any of this. Would that be a fair statement?
I think it would be based on my memory, but I think what the ALJ was talking about, though, was something more needed to be done. We need to continue to evaluate, and fall mats were not put in place. That is a major issue.
I believe me, the floor mats are a big to-do. I get that. However, what if, would this be a different case if Ms. Johnson or whoever had put on the cards, post-March 22-21, there's just nothing more we can do. The sensor in the wall just isn't going to do it. And the floor mats, maybe she won't break anything, but they're not going to stop a fall, not going to stop a fall either. If they had put that on the cards, instead of her just sort of saying that, not in so many words, Would that have been enough? Because that would have showed written documentation of the assessment that I agree, whenever there's a fall, somebody should look at it and say, boy, you know, anything else maybe, you know, does it happen? Maybe it only happens at night. So, you know, regulate it more, you know, put more supervision at night. But if they had done that on the cards, would you still win? Because then they're up, then they're documenting that there was an assessment and they're saying, you know what, not much more we can do, and it's a tragedy, but, you know, as everyone keeps saying, you want to get out of bed, they're going to get out of bed.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, they had updated the cards, and they didn't, fair enough, but she's testifying that there was nothing more to be done, and there's no finding by the district court that I don't believe, I think she's lying when she says that. I don't believe her for a minute. If there's not that, then why isn't the testimony good enough, saying nothing more we could have done?
So I guess I'm not sure if I understand the question. The question, as I understood it initially, was if there was an assessment and documentation, would MDH win? I think the answer to that is they could. It would depend on what that assessment looks like. It would depend on the specific factual circumstances of a subsequent fall. What was the analysis of why the fall mats won't work? Was that objectively a reasonable analysis of why they wouldn't work? You know, you would have to look at the specific context of that. Fair. And I think there was a second part to your question.
Yeah, the second part is if there's no finding from the district court, from the ALJ, that specifically disbelieved Ms. Johnson as to her oral assessments post-fall, that there, again, my words, not yours, there's nothing more we can do. Isn't that a problem for the department?
Well, the department's investigator, I believe, testified that the nothing more we can do argument doesn't hold a ton of water when you have to be sitting down and reevaluating after each fall, what can we do? Can we try something that we already tried that maybe didn't work a long time ago? Maybe that'll work this time. And so again, I think that would...
And there doesn't seem to be anything like that in the record that Ms. Johnson said, correct?
Not that I know of. I don't believe that they tried anything after it was deemed to be, by her, to be ineffective again.
So... Okay, apart from that sort of structural problems, outside of the mats, what should they have done?
Well, they should have been, again, documenting that these assessments were occurring. They should have looked at other bed alarms, other motion sensors, to the extent that they do exist. There's nothing in the record that anyone looked into whether there was another type of either of those things that would be more effective.
And why is not, who has the burden of proof in this case?
At the hearing, MDH had the burden of proof to show by a preponderance.
So, okay, fair enough, you know, the mats I'm going to put over there. But the other bed alarms, once they indicated that the only alarm anybody had been talking about is not going to work, why, and you're saying, well, then they should have looked at other bed alarms. Why wasn't it the department's obligation to introduce evidence, see, here's the Acme one, that'll solve all the problems? Why, and why wasn't that your burden? And if you didn't do it, then how do I know if, I mean, how do I know if there's another alarm out there that works?
It's not the department's burden to, as the Wilshire acknowledged, it is, again, the director of nursing's burden, if you want to call it that. It's not a burden legally. It's her obligation under accepted health standards that she needs to sit down and do an assessment of what could be done. As part of that assessment, that would be, this motion sensor didn't work. Are there any others that would work? And so it would be the Wilshire's burden it would be up to the Wilshire at the hearing to present that evidence to show we considered every conceivable possibility.
Conceivable possibility?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that they need to consider every conceivable possibility, but when you're looking at one type of motion sensor and that one doesn't work, I think that you would have to look into if there even are any others out there.
I'm a little concerned about that, and I'm a little concerned about the burden that's being placed on facilities, particularly one here that's a private facility. It's not, you know, to go to the nth degree to try to prevent somebody from falling and injuring themselves. What would have been sufficient here? I guess. I'm a little concerned as to guidance for facilities going forward as to what they need to do. Is it just that they need to document? Is it that they need to go to the nth degree by searching and trying to find some type of sensor somehow, some way that might, you know, limit the or alert them to the potential for falling? I mean, are we putting on a reasonable burden on facilities, in other words?
Well, there was a very obvious intervention that the Wilshire was aware of available to them after the September fall and the March fall, and that was the floor mats. And that I have to keep going back to that because that's the most obvious intervention that was not employed that was at its disposal.
Judge Hooten, I believe you had a question.
I think I'm okay.
And going to the argument about, I'll try to do this quickly, the argument regarding hospice, as we noted earlier, Chapter 144G governs the obligations that assisted living facilities have. Assisted living services are broad. They include mobility and transfer, which are the types of services that were at issue in our case, or in this case, or the types of services that would
Jonathan,
be.
Mr. Jonathan, speaking for myself and not the panel, there's no doubt in my mind that you can't fob this off onto hospice. So I agree with you.
Then I have 5 seconds left. I will just say MDH is presumed to have the technical expertise in matters like this. The legislature determined that regulating assisted living facilities and making maltreatment determinations are within its authority. Thus, it is entitled deference in this field. There is more than substantial evidence to support the department's finding, and this court should affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank the Attorney General. Mr. Brendel.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are a couple of things, Your Honor. Judge Connolly, you brought up the burden of proof. In this particular case, the burden of proof is on the MDH to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that these allegations and violations are true. In this particular case, if we balance the evidence, and I've sat through dozens of jury trials where attorneys have stood up and talked about a preponderance of the evidence and blind justice and tipping the scales. It's imperative that the fact finder in a case such as this.
I mean, it's a preponderance of the evidence, right?
Right, a preponderance, okay. The greater
so
weight.
So explain to me why. Even under your scenario, which I've already indicated I don't agree with, that, you know, once hospice comes in, you know, it's their deal. Even under your scenario, it seems to me at some point in the March 22-21 date, either the care card should have been updated to say, gotta ask hospice to get a mat, or fine, you know, if we want to do we don't have to update the cards, it was the responsibility of Ms. Johnson to say, hospice, get the mat in here. She's clearly going to keep falling. I mean, everybody agrees that. She has a propensity to fall. I mean, so at that point, maybe there was nothing we could have done to prevent the fall, but there was something that we could have done to mitigate the damages resulting from the fall, right? And again, on the March 22-21, that's when she broke her hip and everything sort of went to hell, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, she was.
And maybe the mat wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But apparently, even hospice was saying mats make a difference, right?
They apparently thought that in certain instances. In this one, I have no explanation why they didn't. But I understand the court's position or your position, Your Honor. But in this particular case, what we're talking about is let's take hospice out of the equation for just a moment here. Let's talk about the facts with respect to what the Wilshire did and didn't do. Now, the argument has been incessantly made by the MDH in this case that there was no documentation of updated care cards or service plans. We've talked about that, whether they were updated or up to date, and whether Ms. Johnson believed that she had analyzed thoroughly every situation and determined that there was nothing more that could be done.
And I will just say, speaking for myself and not my treasured colleagues, the failure to update a card doesn't mean it's updated.
Right.
I don't get that.
I don't understand why the legislature then didn't use the term updated instead of updated.
Well, I mean, particularly in this case, if you're saying it's hospice's deal, then, you know, the easiest way when hospice comes in every day and checks, and I don't know if they do, is to look at the card and say, oh, well, get the mats. She keeps falling. This is a disaster.
Yeah, and I did outline the notes from Brighton Hospice, what they were doing, evaluating the situation. They were well aware of the fall risk and everything, and they were consulting regularly with Wilshire regarding those issues. But
Johnson never asked Hospice to get a mat, right? Okay.
No.
And Hospice never brought a mat. So whose responsibility, I mean, How is hospice to know, get the mat in here, if no one tells them? How does hospice know? And if the card doesn't say, get a mat, I mean, how does hospice know to get the mat?
The same way they knew in other cases in which they did use mats in the same facility.
Okay, does the record indicate how hospice knew to get the mats?
No, okay. there wasn't, and that's the point. There was nobody from hospice called to testify because the investigator in this case never even so much as contacted hospice to find out what their involvement was. Now, as I indicated before, let's just take hospice out of this for a moment. And let's determine whether what my client did was reasonable and appropriate in light of the attendant circumstances. And I understand that there's this suggestion that a mat may have mitigated the injuries to this resident. But to suggest that because of the absence of a document indicating that there was an assessment and there's nothing more we could do elevates form over substance. My client's testimony under oath, subject to cross-examination, was that she had considered every conceivable option to try to prevent these falls and there was nothing more that could be done. The floor mat argument aside, but otherwise, she had complied with every reasonable interpretation of the requirements of the statute in that she had considered everything, she had analyzed it, and she had provided on an objective basis with her experience everything that she believed was reasonable and appropriate in caring for this person in attempting to prevent these falls. And by the way, you are correct, Judge Connolly, that the ALG never disputed anything that Ms. Johnson testified about. But the burden of proof is on the MDH. In this particular case, the only person they had regarding testimony from somebody who believed she was capable of explaining what the acceptable professional standards were was Ms. Stoltz, the investigator. Ms. Stoltz had 1 year of experience in a nursing home. Ms. Johnson has over 20. Ms. Stoltz did not record the interview of the seminal witness in her report who had...
Right, but are those issues really relevant here? Particularly given the fact that we do defer to... we give deference to the agencies.
Yes, and I think that that's an important piece of it here is when you
weigh
the evidence...
But isn't really your stronger argument as to whether... Ms. Johnson had testified to those facts.
Exactly, and that was the point I was going to make. Ms. Johnson did testify to those facts. She was on the stand for hours. She had MDH had every opportunity to cross-examine her, and they didn't lay a glove on her. She has an impeccable record in an impeccable institution, which is private. They do their best, considering the restraints the economic restraints under which they exist and operate every day. And they have done the best they can, including in this case, involving a resident who simply could not be prevented from falling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brendel. Thank you, Mr. Jonasson. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days.